Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Good, Chris. How are you?
Good.
You just had a great marathon.
We're sitting in your store.
Yeah, I know. Slow day.
Yeah, slow day.
Slow day.
So we're going to record a podcast.
Yeah, I had a great day yesterday.
I get to thinking this time of year, everybody's running marathons, right?
Busy time of year.
Busy time of year.
Yeah, busy time of year.
We could add some value by talking about marathon strategies.
That's a good idea, right? Because a lot of people have just signed up for Boston, and they'll be thinking about that training coming up as well.
Right. So when training for a marathon, or just approaching the marathon in general, what are the top three things that you see people doing wrong?
Well, I think they don't make nutritional adjustments early enough in their training program.
Okay. Say more about that.
Well, I think people need to fuel the phases of their training. And I think now the big craze has been, and the way we're taking a lot of people, we talk about fat adaptation and burning more fat for fuel. And I think people don't understand that there's a phase of your training that goes with. You actually should be periodizing your diet right along with your training. So you're fueling the levels of effort at the same time you're producing those levels of effort. And that way you start to get more out of the training process early.
So you get the adaptation in the training.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how long should a training cycle be, you think, for a marathon? For a mid-packer like me, how many weeks do you need?
Well, I think with someone who's run as many marathons as you, I mean, I think still to optimize your training and run your best marathon, 20 weeks.
You know, really?
I think we can eliminate that four-week preparation phase going into it because you already have. But I think a lot of times experienced athletes like yourself don't put as much emphasis on going back to the beginning of a training cycle and redoing the endurance phases of it, which I think is very, very important in every training cycle.
So 3 weeks, is it the optimal training cycle?
Three weeks generally isn't the optimal training cycle, no.
No? So that was one of the top three things you see the athletes doing wrong. What's another one?
Too much too soon. I think too many people start to train too hard too soon for the race, and they don't go through a whole muscular adaptation phase, and they experience a lot of injuries, and they start to get diminishing returns because they have tired legs too early in their training program.
Right, and that prevents you from hitting the hard workouts when you need to well, right?
Right. Again, you go through a cycle and a periodization cycle, and it's a whole cyclical phase of muscular adaptation and preparing the body for the next level of stress as you go along.
I always kind of sat around 12 to 14 weeks on a cycle. I just assume I already have the base, and I just do the hard work. So assume the build is already there.
Well, I think a lot of people have that conception, but you can always increase that base.
Right.
The base can always get bigger. The bottom line is the VO2 max can't get bigger. The base can always get bigger. And I think when you get back to that, and we can go back and use Kenyans and East Africans as an example, and you always see they go back to that 24-week cycle and they start with these astronomical bases that they build.
So nutrition, too much too soon. What else?
And I think not enough people have the focus to look at just the big picture. They need to create a plan where they have short-term goals, measurable goals, attainable goals very early in the cycle so they can start to see progress and success and stay focused along the way.
Yeah, so they don't get depressed and bail out.
Right.
And that's the advantage of having a coach to begin with is people coach themselves. They tend to bail out of the plans early. They don't stick with them.
Well, and I think that comes from the second problem where they do too much too soon and that burns them out as well.
Right. So what if you get an athlete who wants to get faster? What are the top three things? You know, you get somebody who comes in and say, I want to get faster.
You know, I don't think I ever get an athlete who comes in and says, I want to get slower.
No.
when someone comes in and they want to get faster, and I like to take the holistic approach with them. And let's go back to the base. Let's do some muscular strength stuff. Let's work on flexibility. Dial in the nutrition, and let's go through the phases of training. And we'll get to that intensity, and we'll get to that speed work down the road. And staying healthy will get you faster.
And also a lot of mechanics.
Yeah, a lot of mechanics.
Mechanics and form. And that's one thing that you always come back to when you're out, like yesterday, out in the course, looking at people's form. You can tell which ones are doing it right, especially late in the race.
I think our running society as a whole got away from good running form 40 years ago. And, now we're very focused on getting back because we know that better form can reduce the chance of injuries, produce better results. And especially guys like you and I who have run with good form our entire lives because it's all we knew. We didn't know heel strike. And We really watch people run, and I think sometimes, I know you and I have run marathons together where we're running past people saying, oh, get off your heels.
Yeah, coaching people as we go. Yeah. I was coaching some poor guy yesterday who was at the 11-mile mark of that half marathon,
yeah,
and he was just dying. I could tell he was zone six.
Yeah.
And just dying. I'm like, relax, breathe.
Relax, breathe.
Fighting it ain't going to help.
I know.
And then I'm with the Pacers, right? And we're going down a hill. And the guy goes, don't fight the hill. And I'm like, put your elbows back, hips forward.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, what he said.
Yeah. The elbow back, chest forward, and let the feet roll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're getting close to your goal race now, right?
Right.
You're fit. What do you do a week out from a marathon?
And that's a great question because we talk about how to taper. I think the most important thing that people need to understand about that taper period is what taper really is. Taper is about your body rebuilding and recovering. It's not about getting in a last-ditch workout. There's nothing you can really do at that point that's going to increase your chances of running a better, faster marathon other than letting those muscles knit and letting them repair and letting them get stronger. And that should be the focus during the taper period is, you know, as much rest and recovery as you possibly can, you know, while you're still doing some work to enact all the fast twitch, slow twitch fibers so you're burning the gunk out of your legs. But I really emphasize the rest and recovery during taper period so we get that proper rebuilding and people go into the race with fresh, strong legs.
Yeah, but you don't want to get sluggish. So
no.
You don't want to just sit around.
No.
And you don't want to overeat. You got to balance all that with the, because you're under stress, so you're,
yeah, you want to
balance.
Your
tendency is to overeat.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people, they get into taper and they say, oh my God, I'm gaining weight. And I say, well, that's because you're taking in the same amount of calories you were taking in during this intensity period prior to taper. You really have to, again, manage nutrition well so that you're fueling taper just like you're fueling base building, where you're getting a little bit less calorie intake, so you're not putting on that extra weight.
Right. That's what I tell people is I say you should have a nutrition plan for your taper. Like
right.
Actually meal plan your taper because you don't want to be sitting around stressed out with the bag of cookies in reach.
Yeah, that's great advice.
So sort of try to get ahead of that. All right, so we're getting close to marathon now or the day before the marathon. What am I going to do?
Everyone has a different plan. You and I think, talked about this the other day. I sleep like a rock the day before a race.
Yeah.
I don't sleep in my normal life at all. But day before a race, I sleep like a rock because at that point, I know there isn't anything else that I can do. You know, you want to get rest. You don't want to spend a lot of time on your feet. You certainly don't want to start taking in into your system any kind of nutrition that you haven't had before during your regular training. No changes at that point. Get home, relax, find a way to get your mind out of things. I like just to have people say, okay, what's my contingency plan for the next day? We just ran into horrendous conditions that changed every 24 hours here. If you have a contingency plan in place that you can really just make that adjustment to. Okay, I came to this race because it's generally hot here. Oops, it got cold. Well, do I have a backup plan that I can go to very, very easily because it got cold and then I'm comfortable and there's no mental strain because I'm ready for it. So that night before should be about mental preparation, making sure that you have everything you need laid out, ready to go so the next day is as stressless as possible.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what I see in less experienced runners is the ability to freak out when something changes.
Yeah.
Like the weather changes or their favorite socks got left in the bag or,
yeah.
You know, it's like none of that stuff matters. If you've trained well, you can run in a different pair of shoes and a different pair of shorts and a different shirt and not have your special treats.
Yeah. I say this 1,000 times, and especially because I own a running shoe store. I tell people all the time, shoes don't make you faster. Socks don't make you faster. Training makes you faster. And if you've had a great training cycle, that's all you ever really need to rely on.
Yep, that is true. But I see people freaking out on course. So the morning of the marathon, what do we do in the morning of the marathon? Don't forget your bib in the house?
don't forget your bib in the house. That's always a key thing. Make sure you have your bibs when you get down there. You don't have any issues at the starting line. And again, you know, you want to get up race morning. And I tell people to try to treat race morning like they treat their long run morning. Because it's basically what you're doing. You're going out for that long run again. And what did you eat and how did you eat it on the morning of your long runs that was successful? Again, we go back to training cycle and fueling your training cycle. What did you learn on your long runs and how to fuel those long runs? And that's what your morning should be. It should be identical to what those long runs were. So again, your system doesn't have any shocks going to the starting line.
Yeah, and I tend to try to err on the lighter side with the nutrition. If your pre-long run meal is a big bowl of oatmeal, we'll have a half or a third of a bowl of oatmeal, right? Or a banana. Keep it light. because you don't want to be fighting that on course. Yeah. Nobody likes to have to run into the woods in the middle of a marathon when you're trying to run a time. All right, so now we're in the marathon. We're there.
Right?
We're in the race. So you get out and you're running. How do you know? What's the strategy in the marathon? What's your strategy? How do you get your best time? Do you go out as fast as you can, then try to hold on? Do you try to do the negative split? What do you do?
I've always been a fan of the negative split or the steady pace marathon. And again, we go to who the athlete is and how the training cycle went. But I think the focus has to be is to break the race down into shorter races. Too many people, again, they'll go into marathon and say, I'm going to run the first half in this and then the second half in that. And I really think it has to be more of a 5K, 5 mile approach because that allows you to make adjustments at smaller levels. So if you get to a 5K and you realize that you're a minute faster than you wanted to be, okay, I'm exerting too much energy. I have another 5K to back that minute down and relax a little bit rather than getting to mile 13 and saying, oh my God, I'm 6 minutes ahead of my schedule and no, you're not going to have anything left. And at that point, you can't change anything. So you're running a bunch of shorter races and just hitting marks along the way.
I have a couple of comments on that. The first one is that what I found myself doing yesterday was having to remind myself to run now, right? Focus on what you're doing right now and stop worrying about what's going to happen in 10 miles or 20 miles.
Yeah.
Run well and clean now and then run the tangents, have good form, and the rest will sort itself out when you get there, right?
Right.
So again, chunking it up into pieces all the way to saying right now is really the only important time in this race and getting that out of your head. Because I think the mental part of it is what makes marathon so challenging for people, right?
I think not enough people do the mental reinforcements enough as the race is going on. I feel good. Legs feel good. Feet feel good. Everything feels good. Nutrition feels good. And I tell this to folks all the time. Angelo Dunn, he used to say he would never say to a fighter, the other fighter looks tired or you're getting to him. Coach, all those negative thoughts turn into a negative product after listening to him over and over again. Tired turns into your athlete gets tired. So keep reinforcing yourself by telling yourself you feel good. I feel good now. My legs feel good. My knees feel good. Whatever it is, that focus should always be on feel good. Amaka always had a great saying, when it hurts, smile.
Yeah, and I do that now too, especially as I'm getting older. I'll be late in a race and I'll be hurting and I'll go, wait a second, this is a gift. You know how lucky you are to be here doing this right now? And I'll just smile and then all the stress goes away.
Exactly.
The other side of that spectrum is now you get the Garmin that can give you immediate pace feedback and immediate effort feedback. And I tried to do that at Boston and it screwed me up because I spent all my time trying to dial in the pace to within 1 second. You can't do it. The watch just isn't that good.
No.
You shouldn't try to do it in 10-foot segments. You got to do it in miles or bigger segments for your pacing.
Again, the 5K, 5 mile, race strategy. Let's get to here, get to there. Just hit a mark. Because when you get there, again, you can look down at your watch and say, wow, okay, I'm way ahead or I'm right on where I needed to be at this mark. And I pacing a girl yesterday, and that's what I did. I just set up a pace that I felt comfortable with, that I knew was going to hit those 5K marks we wanted to hit, and we just started to hit them.
So how do you know you're running the right pace when you're out there? What's that feel like? Because you're racing, right? It's supposed to be a little bit hard.
Right.
But how do you know what the right pace is? I mean, after enough training and enough racing, you kind of get a feel for it, but...
Yeah, and then there's the magic word, the feel for it.
Yeah.
You're listening to your body, and you and I have had this conversation numerous times and on your show a few times. We know at 5 miles if it's our day or not.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that's hard to learn, but it's one thing if you're in touch with your body, you can learn. If everything's firing right and you're feeling good, your heart rate isn't too elevated, you're hitting your marks and the effort feels easy, listen to what your body's saying. If you're hitting those marks all the time and the effort feels easy, then you're on your day. If you're hitting those marks and it feels like a lot of work, it's not going to be your day and you should say, okay, what's plan B? Plan B is the attainable goal. Plan C is the finish goal.
Right. So that's what I always try to do is I always try to have at least 3 goals.
Right.
And the overriding goal is always just don't die.
Don't die.
Don't die. Have fun. But within that, you want to have a pretty big spread of goals, right? So that here's my A++ goal. Because sometimes you show up and you get the marathon miracle. I've had it happen to me before. And you just run, you have this out-of-body experience and you run the race of your lifetime.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen a lot, but sometimes it does.
But sometimes it does, and you're right. Yeah, so we have that We have that three-tier system where, you know, there's that out-of-reach goal, and that's the day that you get to 15 miles and you feel like you've never felt before, and you say, you know, and I'm going to put the hammer down, and there's that huge PR that comes through. And then there's your attainable goal, you know, the goal you went out to set and the goal you would like to reach. And then there's that, okay, well, I'm just going to get it done goal. And, you know, I'm here, I'm going to get it done, and I'm not going to have the day I wanted to have, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, anytime you finish a marathon, it's okay. There's never any disgrace in not having the race you wanted to have when you run 26.2.
So what do you do when you get late in a race? Because you can have those hard patches where you go, it's not your day, but you got to hang with it long enough to make sure it's not just a blip, right? Because you can cycle in and out of feeling good and feeling bad.
Yeah.
Because I've had those things where I felt bad for 5 miles, but then snapped out of it late in the race to have a great race.
Well, that's a tough mindset for novice runners to make that adjustment, because for novice runners, a lot of times when it starts to go bad, it continues to go bad, and that really is a mental thing. For a guy with 54 marathons under your belt like you do, or an old timer like me, we can say, you know, I've had bad training experience or racing experiences like this, and I know that sometimes they turn good. So let's just see what happens over the next couple of miles. I'm just going to keep working this and see what happens. And then you get that turnaround and you go, yeah, I know I can do this. And again, it's mental. You know, there's so many mental games that go on in the marathon. And it takes years of experience to understand them all and what to do with them all. But the biggest thing is always checking back in. Check back in when something's going wrong. Check back in and say, no, you know what? I feel good. This is good. I'm going to work through it. Another learning experience. What am I learning out of this? These are all positive reinforcement statements you can make that'll keep you going forward.
It's almost like a status check or a health check, because I'll find sometimes where I'll realize I'm struggling and I'll look around and go, well, because you're running up a hill. That's why you're struggling.
Yeah.
Or you missed it's been 7 miles since you've eaten anything.
Yeah.
Right? If you do the little status check and then say, okay, what's going on here? Sometimes you can remedy it. What do you recommend for people doing nutrition on a course?
We have our products that we like.
How do you get that? How often? How much?
You try to, and again, we go right back into the training cycle. What did you learn about your nutritional needs along the training cycle? How many calories an hour did you need, and what kind of calories work best for you? Again, it gets to be very, very individual. We have people who are going to run on 90 calories an hour. We have people who run on 125 calories an hour. I think once you start getting over that 125 in a marathon, that's a lot of calories. So I think you should try to figure out a way that's what you're managing. And again, you know, if you're using gels or using glucose or some kind of carbohydrate solution that's getting into the blood system fast, you're going to find out that most are going to give you 30 to 40 minutes. And so every 30 to 40 minutes is when you're going to want to be taking that next bit of nutrition in or that next bit of energy in.
Yeah, I try to break it up into hour chunks, but I also preload. Would you recommend people preload?
Again, depends. I don't like to start out with a lot of calories in me. I'll drink one serving of Genucan prior to the start of the race, which is about 110 calories, and that will carry me for about an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes before I need anything. Some people like to go in calorie heavy. I'm one of those, a cup of coffee for breakfast, get to the race, drink my Genucan, and I go.
I preload 90 minutes to an hour ahead, I'll preload a Genucan, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing is you don't want to pound the water. I see people, a lot of big rookie mistake is pounding water, because that'll flush the electrolytes out of your system.
Yeah, it does two things, actually. It flushes electrolytes out of your system, and that sloshy too much feeling that you have in your stomach is because you don't have the electrolytes to pull the water into your system, so your gut gets sloshy and heavy.
Yeah. The other thing I noticed is that you can have a plan, but you have to adjust it based on race conditions.
Right.
Right? So if it's a super hot day, that's going to be different. If it's a super cold day like we got yesterday, I'm going to burn way less fuel.
Well, and here's the contrary to that. Actually, your body needs just as many calories when it's cold as when it's hot, because keeping your body warm is more stress on your organs and your heart than cooling your body down. I see people made this mistake, and I used Lake Tahoe, the first Ironman in Lake Tahoe years ago, a couple of years back. So many people DNF'd because they didn't take in enough nutrition. They thought, okay, it's really cold, I don't need to take this in. And you need to take in that nutrition, even when it's cold, to keep the body fueled, to keep the core from getting cold, because it's in there working to produce warmth for your entire body. So you need calories to do that.
Right. I agree with that. I guess I'll adjust it. I would say you need less fluid when it's cold.
Yeah, you need less
and
fluid.
If your nutrition is mixed with your fluids, then you're going to take less of that.
Yeah.
So I'm carrying a bottle of Yukon. I'm going to only take half of that, but I'm still going to hit the water, or I'm going to hit something else
Yeah.
Right? So there's a band around that. You don't have to get every single gel in. It's not going to ruin your race.
Right. Right.
So I had four with me yesterday, and I ended up dropping one. So I had three. What about
that must have been yours we saw on the course. We
were probably. Somebody was said, it an hey, orange
someone,
one?
Yeah. Someone said, hey, someone dropped a glucose packet. We went, oh, it must have been one of our folks.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very entertaining.
Yeah.
What about electrolytes? The magic electrolytes we always hear so much about. Plants love electrolytes.
Yeah, plants. You know, I think, again, you have to, again, this is learned over the course of the training cycle. What's my sweat rate? How much am I losing? What do I need to take in? I think there's a couple of really, really good products out on the market right now. GenuCan makes a great hydrator that gets into the system fast and doesn't stay in your gut. Base salts, I really like base salts because they go right in from your mouth. You put them on your tongue, and they immediately absorb in your system so they don't get into your gut, so you don't have any of that holding the fluids in the gut that over, if you get too many electrolytes, will happen. And Enduralytes have always been a standard go-to product in the industry. If you're getting enough of the Enduralyte capsules, you're good too. But you really want to have the balance. You know, it's not just about sodium. You need the potassium in there as well. So you need electrolytes that have the balance of all the minerals that you need.
All right. So you've been doing this for a long time. What's your, as we move to the exit here, what's your advice to athletes now? They're either looking to run their races in the next 3 weeks or gear up for Boston. What can they think about?
I think the good thing to do now is, especially if you're gearing up Boston, it's taking a little bit of downtime. You probably just came out of a long racing season. Take some downtime. Let your legs recover. Let all the work you've done heal and repair. Let the muscles repair. Then get into a strength and conditioning program, 2 to 3 days of strength work, core work, a lot of flexibility, and start building your base again. Go back to those basics. But I think it's really, really important that you have that downtime so your body can completely repair. And I think a lot of athletes make that mistake that they don't take the downtime between big training cycles. So take a couple of weeks, lose a little bit of fitness. Losing fitness actually brings fitness back better. So lose a little bit of fitness for a couple of weeks as the body repairs. You enjoy the holidays with your family before you gear up for that next big training cycle. If you're 3 weeks out from your race now, a couple of big races still coming up. We have New York in a couple of weeks. We have Philadelphia coming up. California Internationals is in December. So there's a few big races still coming up before the end of the year. Make sure you have the nutrition dialed in. Make sure you have all your plans laid out and what you're going to do. Get some of that, a lot of that race specificity stuff done so you're ready to go on race day.
Yep. And I think when you say let yourself recover fully, that means all the tendonitis should go away.
You would hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to go into a new training cycle as healthy as possible. And, this is what makes elite athletes, is that downtime between races. Heather Jackson, who just came in third at Ironman this past weekend, and she ran a 3:07 marathon off the bike. It was a great day for her. I was at Placid in July when she won Lake Placid, and I was talking to her and her husband, and the thing they said, we're going to go camping for a week. We're going to take our time. We're going to go camping. We're going to get away from all this stuff. We're not going to do any workouts. Then we're going to go down to Portland on vacation for a week, visit some family in California, and after about 2.5 weeks, we'll go down to Tucson, and then we'll start prepping again for Hawaii. And what she was doing was losing some fitness so that her body was repairing, all the aches and pains and the strains were going away so she could rebuild to go into that race. And I think as age groupers, we don't do enough of that. We worry too much about losing fitness. We get crazy over that phrase, losing fitness.
Yeah, we certainly had an interesting day yesterday. It was a good day. Good day for me,
It's a great day for you. You had a great race, and it's funny. You had a great race, and two of our other teammates had really great races. Everyone got through what was a really, really miserable day.
But that's the other thing is race conditions are athlete specific. So when I hear cold and rainy, I'm like, great.
Yeah. And for me, cold and rain, my core got so cold that I couldn't go on. I'm not a cold weather, rainy weather runner. And I got cold to the core and I was done. But everyone else maintained. And even our buddy from Canada who went 6 hours.
6 hours. No training.
6 hours. 6 hours and 30 minutes, actually. And no training in horrendous conditions. Hats off to Brent. That was amazing and inspiring.
Yeah. In a new pair of shoes.
Yeah.
Brilliant. All right. Well, thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.